Well, Peter Major is certainly is a traveling man, and he's got to tell us now where you are, because we couldn't talk to you earlier in the week. We usually talk to him on a Wednesday with the Mining Web Weekly. It's Friday afternoon, and we've finally caught up with him. I can see there's no collar and tie with a T-shirt, which suggests that Pete's been out doing something active. Mr. Major, is that the case?
Yeah, very much. This is a famous shirt. It's called Lead Man. It comes from the Silver Valley, and every year they want to see who the toughest Lead Man is. You have to ski, run, and mountain bike. But I last did this in 2022, so it's an old shirt. But yeah, it shows lead is still popular in the Silver Valley along with silver. But recently, Alec, I spent a fantastic 6 days doing the Kuga Kamina hike, and it's in the Eastern Cape. I don't know if you've heard of it, kind of north of Titsikama, north of, oh boy, I'm going to have to check on a map and send it to you. Yeah, the Kuga.
You say Kruger. It sounds like Kruger would be up in the Kruger Park. Ah,
no,
Kuga.
Okay. Kuga, yeah.
Oh, Kuga. Ons noem het Kuga. There's an Afrikaans in the word, man.
The Kuga Kamina. Kamino. Yeah.
Kuga.
It's 55 kilometers of finding yourself.
And? Did you?
It's fantastic. Yeah. They break it into 15-kilometer hikes each day. And the hosts are fantastic. The food is fantastic. The organization is double fantastic. They get 11, 12 stars out of 10. If anybody wants to go and see the Eastern Cape, see the scenery, the wildlife, get fit and eat like a hog, the best food you've ever seen in your life. And they wait on you hand and foot. You stay in fantastic accommodation every night, huge breakfast. They have donkeys taking ice packs of beer and drink to you way up in the mountains. I could go on forever, Alec. It's too cool to cover in 5 minutes.
The Kuga Kamina. We got it. Okay.
And
Glencore.
And talk to
had a market
Katrina
day.
Mm-hmm. And Bronwyn.
Okay. Keith, Katrina, and Bronwyn. You're giving them a lot of publicity. I hope that you're going to get a freebie when you come back next time.
But yeah, Pete, I'll need one.
Glencore. Okay. Let's talk about Glencore. The market day. First of all, what is a market day? Just explain why companies do this.
I honestly didn't know they had a markets day today, but if you just see the headlines this week, it looks like too much for one company to be involved in, Alec. They're talking about going 50-50 with Codelco to build a smelter in Chile, a 1.5 million ton copper refinery smelter. That is big money. They're talking about going 50-50 with Teck on a big copper mine in British Columbia. They're talking about doing a 50 JV with Vale, you know, big Canadian nickel miner now owned by the Brazilians. And they're talking about letting go of 1,000 employees and being more efficient. They realize they don't have a great reputation as being efficient miners. They've got some good projects, good mines that a lot of people have been quite cynical that they don't know how to mine. Glencore has their fingers in a lot of operations, you know, from mining, trading, smelting. They may be spread a little too thin. These JVs may work in their favor. You know, they're going in with real experienced people. And I think there's some lessons for it in our government that our government could learn. You know, Chile wants to remain the dominant copper miner and refiner on the planet. They don't want to give all their concentrates to China and be dependent on Chinese smelters. So if Glencore is willing to go 50-50 with them, that's going to work to their advantage on the mines they've got, and they get to run the smelter, and they obviously get to trade the metal. So these are important JVs we've seen with Argentina, with Peru, with Chile, Canada. Our government could learn from this.
It was earlier in the week. I did pop in and have a watch of Gary Nagel He's the CEO of his opening presentation. As you say, they're aggressive and there's a lot going on. The shares went up 6.5% as a result of that shortly after the presentation. But tell me about Gary Nagel, because for many people, Glencore still is Ivan Glazenberg. Gary Nagel, clearly South African. He speaks like a guy from Joburg. He's got that accent. Who is he? What's he about? And is he for real?
Yeah, he's for real. He's been with the company a long time. It was a well-thought-out handover to go from Ivan Glazenberg, who's literally pure South African, until he became a Swiss national. So he's been with the company a long time. He's a known hand, a safe hand, well-respected, well-trusted. Knows the business. And it's not easy following a guy like Ivan Glazenberg, but people say Gary was more approachable and understood the nitty-gritty that Ivan may have been slipping on. You know, you can be at the company too long, but if you take it to higher and higher stages, maybe you lose touch with the lower bits. So I must say, in my limited experience, I have heard nothing negative about Gary from anybody I've dealt with. I'm sure he's got a few defects, but yeah. And you see what he was saying. We listen to the market. You know, we hear what the market's telling us. Now, you got to watch that you don't necessarily hear and implement everything the market says, because we know there's a lot of propeller heads out there and test tube babies that now have an MBA or they're working for a financial firm. They think they know how to give orders to mining companies. But an experienced mining executive can listen, process, weed out what is nonsense, but take in what are important factors. I think Gary's making an effort to do that.
So once we have, and I say once we have, because it's inevitable that one day we will have a business-friendly mining minister. The first door they should be knocking on is Glencore's. If Glencore is prepared to do or wants to do partnerships with countries, as you say, in Argentina, Chile, Peru, my goodness, these are South African boys who might be working on a global stage, but they could certainly make more of an impact here. Although at the moment, they're closing smelters. And I guess there's a story in that too.
Well, they are, Alec, but they're doing it for economic reasons, not for political reasons. And remember about 20 years back when ARM was breaking into coal mining in a big way, who did they choose to go partners with and to operate their coal mines was Glencore. So you're right. Glencore is run by a South African. They're not afraid to come to South Africa. Yes, it's a pity if they have to close those smelters, but that's pure economics. And the government still says they're looking at our 11th hour reprieve. They should never have let it go on that long and get to that state. But we know government they have their fingers in everything, but they can't really manage anything. And so they can't really manage the ports, the railways, the electricity, the crime, you know, the things that were driving mines to close and driving investors away. But Glencore is one of the few companies that stayed here and has made a real effort. So you're right. Big opportunity.
I suppose there's also a big opportunity, although it doesn't look like it right now, with the US. There are more insults being traded between the two countries this week. While you were doing the Kucha Camino, we had another broadside from the US Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, who really really had a go at South Africa, and certainly, well, he called it the ANC-led South African government. Is there a door opening there somewhere? What is it going to take for us to turn the complaining customer, i.e. the US, into a friend?
There's got to be a way, Alec. There's always a door. And let's go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis. We can even go back to World War II. And, you know, both Stalin and Hitler were making efforts to try and stop the war. But the Cuban Missile Crisis is more relevant. You know, two big guys don't want to back down. And all the people on Run knew this could only be a disaster and that everybody wanted it to go away. And so I think we're in a Cuban Missile Crisis here. South Africa does not want to be on the bad side of a country the size of the States. We don't want to be on the bad side of anybody, and we shouldn't have to be. So we need someone to go behind the scenes, somebody that maybe even below Marco Rubio, because I worry that he's a megaphone for Donald Trump. And when he was running for president in previous elections, I always wondered, does this guy really have a brain and a mind of his own? Or is he a complete populist, a complete yes man? So, yeah, I think they got to go to somebody under him that he trusts and say, Marco, we can make you look really good. South Africa wants to get out of this. Can you give us some specific things to look at? And we'll come back with you and tell you how many of those specific items we can do in a second and how many we can work on and get accomplished. Because you're right, Alec, this is benefiting neither side. And I think even Trump will realize that. His advisors will realize that. But yelling is not going to fix it. And we know how despots love to stand up to big guys. You know, we heard Robert Mugabe go on forever about that. Jimmy Carter got up and left. They were getting a $250 million grant from the States back in 1982. And Bob just couldn't hold back. He had to unload. And Jimmy Carter there with the delegation to hand over the $250. He got up, walked out, flew back. And the press was asking Bob, geez, do you think you're going to lose that $250? Did you really need to go on with that tirade? And he says, maybe not, but it's good people know how we feel. Well, you know, was that how we feel or how Bob felt? So this can be fixed. South Africa's got to make a double effort. You know, when you're the small guy, you have to make a double effort. Might not be right or fair, but geez, let's get on their good side. There's so much the States can offer us. And they had been giving us. And I can see why the administration's pissed off, because for 30 years, South Africa went out of their way to give the U.S. the finger, to vote against them in United Nations more often than China and Russia did. And we thought it was cute. And we know Israel's the U.S. ally. Doesn't mean we have to like Israel, but when we persecute them, want to stone their embassy and stuff, you know, they can't expect the U.S. to ignore that. This is where diplomacy is required. We need some real diplomats here.
Indeed. Well, and that's unfortunately, from a business point of view, you can only work within the parameters that you're given. And if you've got this kind of chaos going on at a different level, and the political level, it makes it incredibly difficult. But getting back to specifics here in South Africa, over the past week, and now you need to explain how you pronounce these, because someone had a go at me for calling it Robex and Bauba or Bauba. How do you pronounce the names of those two? First of all, those two operations, Robex, which is a construction group, and then Bauba, which is a mine, rather.
Yeah. People I rely on told me it was Bauba, not Bauba, Bauba. So that's what I've been saying. Look, this could be some recent news I'm not aware of, Alec. Is there a kind of a merger going on here?
Let me update you. Yeah, okay. Let me update you. So Robex came out this week to say that Bauba, which it bought, and you can tell us all about that, only 4 years ago, is now up for sale. It's put a lot of money into Bauba. $400 million, I think, was the number that I managed to track down going through various financials. It's got a huge stockpile there of chrome ore. It also, Bauba apparently also mines PGMs, platinum group metals, but it's now up for sale and very much up for sale, which is quite strange because Robex bought it 4 years ago, but they're now saying the strategy's changed. They're not going on this vertically integrated contract mining anymore. They're now going to become more of a construction company. So that's the news that came through. What's the context of that?
Okay, I remember that. We had a mandate to help find funders for Bauba for quite a few years. So I'm rusty, but I know. They had a big exploration portfolio, Alec, maybe too big. They had a lot of, I thought, very good properties. But boy, do you need cash to develop those properties. And they didn't have cash. And you could say they maybe weren't quite focused. You know, they had one mine that had a bit of a short life and it needed a cash injection to go underground from open pit. And they thought they were going to get that with Robex. I think Robex was like a poor second to Aframat. They saw Aframat getting into mining and starting to make some money, and they wanted to. Unfortunately, you're a construction company, or let's look at Aframat. They were a logistics basic mining company, you know, gravel, bit of asphalt, aggregate, getting into concrete. All that involves logistics. And chrome mining and coal mining really rely on logistics. Trucks, trains, ships. And boy, that's where most of the cost is. Trucks, trains, and ships. Mining it is only a third of the cost. You know, transporting it to the harbor is a third, and then getting it from the harbor to the Chinese smelter is the other third. So if you don't have a real competitive edge in trucking or trains or cargo, it doesn't matter how good you are at mining. And chrome is not like iron ore. The margins in chrome, they're much smaller most of the time, whereas iron ore, the margins are very good most of the time. So this is on the export side. But I think what happened, Robex just realized, geez, these guys need a lot more capital expenditure. They got great properties, but are we a company that knows how to develop a chrome mine, let alone a PGM mine? And geez, not only you got to know how to mine PGMs, you got to know how to mill them. And then who's going to smelt them for you? Who's going to refine them for you? And the other players aren't willing to really help out a competitor unless they're going to make a lot of money. So that's my see-through. I don't have the latest, but I think Robex, it was a trend of things. PGM prices were flying. Chrome was flying a few years ago. It looked like everybody's making money, the legals, the illegals, and you think you're missing out. But Robex is probably experiencing somewhat what Aframat is. Huh? Aframat lost their big iron ore market with ISCOR, ArcelorMittal, and their coal price has gone down. They still don't have all their licenses. And the whole time, trucking and trains and ships and cargoes, ports, man, those are too many things you can't control. I can see why Robex, if they can get a halfway decent price, would probably sell it in a second. And yeah, it's going to take a real mining company with deep pockets to turn those assets to account that Bauba has. And they're good properties.
It's quite related to another announcement that came through this week from Thungela Coal, that they've done a deal on Goede Hoop mine, which was coming to the end of its life, but had a railway siding. And they've sold it to Beseechi PLC, a London-listed company. Now, it appears as though it's a great deal for Thungela. They could get up to 700 million rand for it, depending on the earnout. But they will take off their balance sheet the 41 million rand that they have to pay the state for rehabilitation. Well, not pay the state, but that they have to use to rehabilitate the mine. And they lost 111 million on it last year. So you've got a loss maker that has got a liability there, which is suddenly you're going to make money out of it. So it looks like a really good deal for Thungela, but why would Beseechi step in there, apart from the fact that there's a railway siding? Is it that valuable?
No, not for most people. I don't know enough about that, Alec. Sidings are valuable, but that's a lot of money for a siding. But if it's a well-used siding, if it's in good shape and it's on the main line, and maybe they've done the numbers and they've... See, our coal mining is so fractured the last 10, 20 years. You know, I'm a student of the 80s and 90s when you had seven large mining houses controlling most of the mining here. And large mines were efficient and they were made for big railroads, you know, in the the whole Richards Bay coal terminal, Richards Bay coal line, it was set up so efficiently. Now, if this British company sees there's a lot of mines around this area, they're barely making it because coal prices have fallen 25-30% the last 6 months, and we can get a good contract with Transnet to move it from this siding. Look, somebody must have done the numbers. And yeah, maybe it benefits someone who wants to centralize the coal loading and hauling for that area, whereas Tungela says, well, we just had one mine that had this siding, but we don't want to get involved in servicing half a dozen mines, and they're all different owners, and none of them have balance sheets, and their payment's erratic. I think you're seeing all the big mining houses, Reels, Billiton, they keep wanting to sell assets that they say distract us or take too much time. You know, I see Reels wants to get down to three assets. You know, we used to think Reels was a big rivalry to Anglo American that probably had 12 different mineral production centers and probably four times that in the number of mines. So Tungela the same. Yeah, let's focus on fewer, bigger, higher margin assets. This is the beauty of capitalism. If you've got unbridled capitalism, people can trade with anybody. They don't need BE. They don't need government permission. They don't need the freaking locals' permission or the union's permission. You know, take the shackles off capitalism and let people who are made for these assets or think they can handle the assets, let them take them off the company that has it. The company that sells it will use that money elsewhere where they're more comfortable with and have a better margin, which means it's a sustainable mine, a sustainable operation.
Another story to come out, and a similar one to a degree, you remember a company called Avenge, a little bit like Raubex, I suppose. It used to be a construction company. Well, they've trimmed down to pretty much two assets, one of them being Moolmans, which is a mining business you would know and you can tell us about, and the other one being an Australian company called McConnell Dowell. Now, they were going to sell both of them. They've decided to keep McConnell Dowell, but to sell Moolmans. But what surprises me is they've appointed a guy called Pieter van Grienen, who's a veteran miner, as the CEO of Moolmans, which they're going to sell. So come on, help me out here, Pieter. Why would they do that?
Look, Moolmans tried a model that Avenge had tried before and a couple other companies had tried before. They said to mining, they went to low-level mining companies, junior mining companies, and they said, if you think you only need a little bit of money to get this mine producing revenue, we can put in that money, but mostly we're going to put in the staff, the team, the equipment, and we'll develop that mine. We want to get away from this contractor. They call it the contractor owner. And various companies have tried that the last 20 years. And they probably really started it with the new MPRDA when all kinds of new people had mining properties that never had them before. And so their only alternative was to go to this contractor / owner developer. Unfortunately, nobody had deep enough pockets, Alec. And our legislation was changing, but people couldn't interpret it correctly. So, you know, some companies got their prospecting rights in months. Some didn't get them in years. Some got their water use license in months. Some didn't get them in years. And just look at Aframat on their coal mining side with commodity. You know, if you don't have all your licenses, it can freeze you from mining a real profitable, easy to get part. So I don't want to get sidetracked here. That's what's happened. You either get a contractor who just wants to contract, and before you know it, he's taking angles and cuts and chances all the time, you know, trying to keep his margin up. And then the mine is then rendered uneconomic or unsustainable. We haven't found a model that's worked here in the last 20 years. We haven't found a model that replaced the traditional South African mining house. And that model didn't develop because of apartheid or the NP government. That was a natural, logical progression of big mining in Africa, that you had to have huge balance sheet, huge technical staff and capabilities, and you had to have enough operations that if one operation or two went against you, the others could carry it. And I haven't seen a viable replacement for that yet. So, yeah, can I talk about Peter? No, I don't know enough about him. I barely remember the name, Alec, and it was quite a few years ago.
Why would they appoint someone when they're busy selling the operation and let the guy who runs it retire, take early or whatever, but retirement?
Look, if you're trying to sell something, your best salesman is going to be the CEO, because whoever buys it, they're either buying it because it's such a fantastic asset that they think they can run it, or they think it's a great asset that has a good management team. And so my thinking is, I don't know who the previous CEO was, but they must be putting their, you know, you're tying this thing in ribbons and wrapping paper and putting a star on it, and a flower. So you certainly don't want to put someone that has a bad reputation, and you don't really want to put an unknown person there. You want somebody who can speak the lingo and make the buyer feel comfortable with the asset, you know, to say, I can do this. And if you don't think I can do it, I'll help you find somebody. But here's why I can do it, and here's why you guys should buy it, and you're going to make a lot of money out of it.
And he is a veteran. He was with Anglo-American and De Beers for 16 years and has gone on to other operations, is running his own business until then. So, well, they've clearly made a big call on him. Pete, if we just go into just close off with copper, because a big part of that jump in the Glencore share price in the wake of the markets day was that they're going to expand more into copper. We have seen Anglo American get terribly excited about its deal with Teck. Now that it is going ahead, BHP won't be putting any spoke in the wheel there. It's about copper. Why is copper, just for the uninitiated, why is copper such a hot mineral right now?
They say it's the new age. They say, if we're going to alternative energy, you know, we need a lot more copper wires in cars. We need more copper transmission lines instead of aluminum. Everything's going to run on electricity, and it's going to be generated a lot cheaper than it's been generated before. And a lot of the world still doesn't have electricity. And you can't be a modern country without unlimited electricity. You need it reliably. You need it cheap. And you need it widespread. So yes, copper ticks all those boxes, but do countries have the money to electrify that quickly? And we keep hearing, well, there's no new mines to replace the current mines. Yeah, kind of. And look, there's nothing like high prices to attract new mines. You know, whenever you think you got a shortage of something, just jack the price up. Look how we flooded the market with lithium. That was such a rare mineral. So I see Goldman Sachs is saying this thing is a bit of a bubble, and people basing their decisions on these kind of prices are going to come short. I'm with them on that. I think if you're only going to build a mine now because you think you're going to get $10,000 copper in real terms for the rest of that mine's life, that's a risky decision. I see Harmony doing it. You know, Barrick tried it. They're starting to make a little money. They got in when copper is cheaper, but Harmony's coming in at pretty expensive copper prices, and they're paying pretty expensive prices for those properties, and they have to do the capex. They have to build the mine, the mill. Look, I pray it's correct. You know, I pray copper goes to 12 and 14,000 and it stays there. I'm a miner, and I'm from mining countries, the USA and South Africa, and it'll do us good. It can only do us good if it stays here. Because hopefully it'll bring our copper production up. It'll keep going again. It'll get Prieska going again. It'll get Massena going again. Because all three of those properties ran for 80, 90 years. Well, Prieska didn't. It was only found in the late 60s, early 70s. But they could run another 80, 90. All three of those at much lower prices than we've got today. So I think there is hype there, Alec. There's not the LME stockpiles to service what all these speculators want. They say LME stockpiles haven't been this low in 10, 20 years, and the U.S. stockpiles are getting taken up by big trading companies. So it's a little bit like the silver boom in the late 70s when Bunker Hunt, he was scooping up the actual metal because he knew the shorts couldn't deliver. And I worry there's people out there who've been shorting it. Chinese have been burned before shorting copper. It acts like there's a short position out there. It's a great metal.
But
at this price,
We got to close off with gold. You have been following it very closely. Many people in the BizNews tribe are besotted with gold. They have positions in gold. In fact, it's in our portfolios. We've got the gold ETF now in our portfolio as well. What is your prognosis as we stand right now?
Alec, I think you're doing the right thing, having a gold ETF instead of the shares. Because if the gold price comes off, it's not going to drop by too much, whereas the share prices will come off multiples. And you can see gold's battling to get back to its high, 43.50. You know, I'm surprised it got back to 42.50 as quick as it did, but it seems to have hit a bit of a ceiling here. And maybe it's not going to fall in a heap, but what if it just goes flat here? The cost increases in all these mines is crazy. It's double digits. And the fact that Sibanye got their South African unions and operations to sell on 5.5%, that is such a big plus for the country and for the company and for the unions. You know, it's guaranteed those workers great jobs for 3 more years at above the PPI. But the rest of the costs on these mines, it's way double digits. So, yeah, gold, I'm really happy, but I'm not bullish at this level. Bullish means you think it's going up more. No, I don't. I know silver is going up without it, but I'm just too scared, Alec. I'm too conservative, probably too old. Keep the gold ETF. But yeah, I'm worried the companies now are too, their costs are too high. They're spending money like they think gold's going to stay at this price. I'm just very wary. You know, this is kind of the Christmas cheer. And hope I'm wrong.
Peter Major with Modern Corporate Solutions and our go-to man on all things mining. This has been your Mining Web Weekly. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.